ready.
Man, this whole society got our women looking at themselves crazy, man. Can you imagine if a dude was walking around talking about he didn't want to wear a pair of khakis because it made his dick look big, man?
For real talk.
You ain't ready for the relationship your grandmother and granddaddy had. You ready to leave your dude if he don't text you back fast enough.
All the time.
And see, that's what's so crazy to me, right? Because you can be against police brutality and not want cops to die. The two ideas ain't mutually exclusive.
Welcome to the Span Report with your host, Mr. Span.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Span Report podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Span, and this is episode number 103 of the report. Yeah, man, this is the second time your man Span, actually damn near the third time your man Span has tried to record this particular episode of the show. As you guys know, if you got the quick hit episode, if you had a chance to take a listen to that, I've moved away from doing the show live on YouTube, right? So I will no longer be using the Google Hangouts feature. And part of the reason why I was even using YouTube to begin with was because I already had an established YouTube channel. It had over 2,000 subscribers on there, and everybody pretty much knows YouTube, so you can kind of make it easier for folks who aren't necessarily familiar with podcasts to just go over to YouTube and just take a listen to the podcast or watch me do the podcast live on there. But I started getting hit with copyright claims over and over again over on YouTube for some of the sound clips that I was using some of the things that I was using as far as like just kind of buttressing a point or whether or not it'd be a song or something like that. Like, I remember the last episode I think I did, we were talking about Bald Head Hoes and stuff like that, and I used 57 seconds of that song. Yeah, somebody put a copyright claim on that video, and so they started getting stats on my video. They started being able to place advertisements on my videos, and so that became a bit of a headache for you, man. You know what I mean? So what I'm going to start doing is and I actually attempted to do this earlier today, was using Spreecast in order to facilitate the live show so that you guys can participate in the show, you know, and send me questions while we're doing the show and participate in the chat room. It's a much more, I think it's much more geared towards that on Spreecast than it is on YouTube. It's a lot easier to do that. And it's if you guys are familiar with Spreecast, you can just go to Spreecast and subscribe to the show. And it's the Span Report. Just look for the Span Report on Spreecast. But yeah, man, I tried to record the show earlier today, and I was running into some issues, some audio issues when it came to some of the sound clips that I wanted to use today. So this is the third time I've tried to record this, right? And not only that, today's been my daughter's birthday, so I had to like really push this back because I had to go do daddy-daughter dance, you know, time today, right? You know, and yeah, so that was going on. So it's basically been a really busy day for your boy, and right now it's like 12:22 as I start this particular episode of the Span Report. But without further ado, man, let's go right on ahead and get into this. Yeah, man, but before we get into the basics of the show or what we're going to talk about here later on tonight, gotta let you guys know how to get in touch with me here at the Span Report podcast and let your voice be heard, man. You can hit me up at area code 313-288-0485. There's area code 313-288-0485. Leave me those voicemail messages, and of course I will play those messages here on the show and respond in kind. You can also email the show. The email is feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Leave me those email address, those emails, and I'll read your emails and of course reply to those emails here on the show as well. Chop it up with your man on Twitter and Instagram and the Mr. Span fan page. My name on all of those platforms, of course, is Mr. Span. Mr. Span on Facebook and Mr._Span on Instagram and or Twitter. So chop it up with me throughout the week using those platforms. Send me your ass hat of the week submissions, man. Ass hat of the week submissions. Give me some people to talk about, man. We got a couple of them this week. So, yeah, send me those at asshat@thespanreport.com, man, and I'll talk about whoever the fuck it is you want me to talk about during the ass hat of the week segment. Also, give your mans a review. preferably 5 stars. All of your 5-star reviews will be read here on the show as I get them, right? So, you know, give me a 5-star review, and I'll give you your shine here, man. It's a way to help the show grow, and it's your way of putting on the show, man. It's very much appreciated when you guys do that. And another thing, too, that I kind of wanted to announce on this particular episode, and this is something that I have never done. And it's been 6 years. It'll be 6 years in June when I started this podcast. One of the things I've always prided myself on with this particular show and with the podcast period is that I've never asked for a dime in the 6 years to do this show. Right. And part of it, I believe, is my own pride. Right. Part of it is my own pride because I had this belief that if I wanted to do this, then I'd have to pay for it. Right. This is what I want to do. I have to pay for it. It's on me to do it. And, you know, I've never taken a shot at anybody for soliciting donations, man. I donate to shows that I believe in and I love listening to and things like that. So I never thought it was something that was, you know, wrong. It's just something that I never had the courage to ask for. Right. I'm just going to put that on me. I've never had the courage to ask for. I didn't know whether or not people would be willing to donate to the Spare Report. Right. But it's come to a point where I kind of feel like, you know, after 6 years, that maybe it wouldn't be, you know, off the pale or off the beaten path for me to ask my listeners to kind of help contribute to the Spare Report, especially if you guys love the show, especially if you guys like listening to the show, that if you would like to donate to the show, that even donations would be very much appreciated. So I did put up a donation tab on thesparereport.com, and it's set up to where you can give, you know, whatever you want as often as you want. So if you want to donate once, it's very much appreciated. If you want to donate more than once, it's very much appreciated. You can go over there on thesparereport.com and hit the donate button, and you can facilitate that. And whatever you guys decide to give, and however much you guys decide to give, every bit of it is appreciated. There's a lot of things that I want to do here with the Spare Report to expand it, so to speak. And I got some ideas with my wife and everything else that we want to do. And right now, it's kind of tight for your mans, right? It's kind of tight. It's far from when I was able to give out $100 prizes here on the show. So, yeah, man, if you guys feel as if you can help, every little bit does help. And so I thank you guys in advance for all of you who will participate in that. Thank you so much in advance. But, yeah, man, we got some stuff to talk about. And, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk about, really, like, it was like really a random thought. Like, my daughter, again, like, today was her birthday and she just turned 13, and I'm feeling kind of old, right? Because I remember when she was young, like a baby, and like her waking me up in the middle of the night to fix a bottle, and she wouldn't wake her mom up. She would do that to me. Right? It was as if she knew daddy would take care of this. And so she always came to me to get her bottles made. And I remember, you know, how when she was real little and I would go to work or whatever, and, you know, she'd be so happy to see me come home from work and everything else. And this was when me and her mom were still together and whatnot. And it was like, I remember those times, man. I cherish those times. And so, like, now my daughter's 13. She's a young woman and I'm feeling old, and I'm starting to I'm feeling it, right? I'm feeling it. But you know, I was talking about some of the things that, like, a lot of, like, these kids wouldn't necessarily understand, right? And it kind of made me think, because I remember there was a time, like, my daughter's phone had gotten messed up. She had dropped her iPhone, and she, you know, basically I had to send her phone in. I had to file an insurance claim, send her phone in, and she was going to be without a phone. But we went to T-Mobile to go get her another phone. And it was basically like a little loaner phone, just something to get her by until she got her phone back through the insurance claim. And it was like a feature phone, you know, like the regular phone with the, you know, with the numbers on it. It wasn't a touchscreen on it or anything. And I remember while she had this phone, like, she never would call me from her phone number. She would always call from either her mom's phone or she would call from her grandmother's phone. And I asked her, I said, well, baby, why ain't you calling me from your number? You know, why? What's wrong with your phone? And she said, well, nothing's wrong with the phone, daddy. I just don't know how to use it. right? Excuse me. A regular phone. My daughter had no clue how to use it. She had no clue how to navigate through it. And like, she really didn't have the patience for it either. Like, she's been programmed to believe that a phone is supposed to have a touchscreen on it. And that's another, that's one of the things that, you know, like these kids today, man, like they won't ever know a time where phones didn't have touchscreens. Or even when it comes to like the internet, like the internet is ubiquitous now. They would never know the noisy sound of dial-up internet trying to connect. They would never know the AOL disc that used to come in the mail saying you get 1,000 hours free. You know, they would never know pagers. They would never know VHS and having to adjust the tracking and make sure that your picture was coming in clear. They will never know CD players with anti-skip protection. You know, they would never know carrying around books of CDs and have your entire music collection with you. They would never know these things, man. Everything is like basically in the palm of their hands, right? And they would never know this. And you know what, it just made me think of that, man. Like, my daughter turning 13, me being 35, I'll be 36 later this year. Like, some of the things that I grew up with and looking at some of the things that these kids are growing up with now, like, it's just like they will never understand what it was like growing up without those things, right? And much the same way that I would never know what it was like to not have video games. I've grown up with video games all my life. I've grown up with cable all my life. You know, so those are things that I grew up with that my mom and my dad and my grandparents didn't have, you know. And so, yeah, man, it was just something that it was real interesting. It was something that I was thinking about, man. I'm being really nostalgic right now, right? But, yeah, let's get that. I've gotten that, you know, that random thought out of the way. But, I want to talk about Cam Newton, man. And I know it's been one of the things about it is like right now I'm probably late with my Cam Newton analysis, right? You know, like at this point, the Super Bowl has been over for a week now. You know, a lot of the rigmarole or a lot of the rhetoric that was being spoken about Cam Newton is almost 2-3 weeks old now. And people are kind of like moving away from it. But I haven't had a chance to speak to it, so I'm going to speak to it now. And one of the things that I thought was interesting was the fact that a lot of folks were criticizing Cam Newton because of the way that he left that press conference after losing the Super Bowl. Of course, you guys know I was a Carolina Panthers supporter. I still am a Carolina Panthers fan. I've always been a Carolina Panthers fan along with my Detroit Lions. And I wanted them to win that Super Bowl. And, you know, folks were making so much about the fact that Cam Newton got up away from that press conference. And one of the things it made me think about was how we perceive grief or loss, right? And so, you know, it made me think, you know, like, it made me think to something, I don't want to say it's similar, because no, it's really not similar, but it just kind of goes into how we relate to, how we deal with grief, right? And so, one of the things I thought about was when my grandfather died, my mom's dad. When my grandfather died, I remember going home to Chicago for the funeral, and I remember my uncle being there. I remember my aunt, my uncle, my aunt, and a cousin of mine. They were taking pictures and posing by the casket at my grandfather's funeral, right? Now, this is something for my family which was kind of foreign, right? And to me at the time, it was like, it's kind of morbid. Like, what the hell are you doing? Like, why are you posing next to the casket? Why do you have smiles on your faces? Like, what is it about this moment that makes you feel like this is something appropriate to do, right? And again, in my family, that wasn't what we did. You know, we pretty much had like a stoic demeanor at funerals, you know, outside of the occasional time when my brother acted a plum fool at a funeral, you know, like, and that's a story for a different time. You know, like, I remember having this thought at me, like, what the hell's wrong with y'all? Why y'all doing that? Like, what makes y'all thought that? What made you think that would have been appropriate? Like, the taking of pictures at funerals, I always had, you know, I had this idea that it was a pretty morbid thing. I didn't realize how common practice it was, and folks generally do this. I said do again. Folks generally do this. Not all the time, but it's not as uncommon as I once thought it was, right? And so I'm looking at them and I'm thinking that they're morbid and I'm thinking that something's wrong with them and I'm thinking that this wasn't the appropriate place for that to be happening. But at the end of the day, I had to check myself. And I had to check myself because at the end of the day, my aunt, that was her father. My uncle, that was his dad. My cousin, that was his grandfather along with me. And so who am I to tell them how they're to deal with the grief that they're feeling right now over the loss of our grandfather, over the loss of their father? Who am I to say how they're to deal with that, right? And so it made me think about that when Cam Newton was going through his press conference, and he was very short with the reporters. He was very short, you know, he really didn't have a whole hell of a lot to say. The man had just lost the biggest game of his life in front of millions of people. And minutes later, you're asking him some really silly questions. He doesn't really feel like talking. He didn't want to be in that particular position. And we are expecting him to act professional. And I say that they said act professional because I'm going to play a clip here of Stephen A. Smith sort of echoing those sentiments. And we'll talk about this in a second. Just here we go.
Cam clearly upset after the loss. He spoke briefly to reporters and then he walked out. Stephen A., do you have a problem with how he handled this?
Yeah, I do. It was an incredibly disappointing ending to an unquestionably illustrious season. Cam Newton showed us that he still has some growing up to do. Cam Newton showed us that everything that his father came on this show in San Francisco and proclaimed was utterly false. Because in the end, when he had an opportunity to stand up and be the man that he's been expressing that he had become, he passed the buck. And that's really what this comes down to. It's not the end of the world. Doesn't make him a bad person. Doesn't make him a bad guy. He still warrants league MVP honors. He's still the future face of the National Football League as far as I'm concerned. He's a spectacular talent who had a spectacular season. Doesn't take away from all of his work in the community, his philanthropy, his generosity, all the good deeds of him giving the footballs to little kids after touchdowns are scored. None of that should be ignored. But it will be because it's the Super Bowl. And at the end of the day, the guy that was dabbing and had a nation of folks dabbing, that had us conversing about everything from celebrations to the celebratory tendencies of African-American athletes and beyond, ultimately had an opportunity to stand up and just be a grown man when you lost, to be just as grown up when you're losing or when you've lost, as celebratory as you were when you were winning. And you passed the buck on that. Luke Kuechly, Thomas Davis, Jonathan Stewart, and so many others stood there answering questions in the aftermath of a loss, hurting just as much as Cam Newton, having gone through as much pain as him. But nevertheless, they had to stand up there and be professionals and deal with the situation. And he elected not to do so. And that was what was sad about this. Now, I saw Marshall Faulk talking last night, along with others, trying to give explanations. I listened to Brian Dawkins talking on Mike and Mike this morning about how there was somebody for the Denver Broncos right nearby talking about how they had humbled Cam Newton and how that may have contributed to him getting up and walking out of his post-game press conference. Still not an excuse. Can't do that. Not after the way you celebrated. Not after the way you had a nation of people standing up in support of you celebrating. Not after you reminded us midway through the season that if somebody had a problem with you, do something about it. Don't let you in the end zone. Well, the Denver Broncos did just that. Mm. And then you come out and you say, you make statements like, they really didn't do all that much. I'm paraphrasing here, but I think that was your statement. It was something along the way. I'm looking for it here, Skip. He said they made more plays than us. We had our opportunities. There wasn't nothing special that they did.
Yep.
Sacking you 6 to 7 times is nothing special.
Yep.
Neutralizing your offense is nothing special. Being in your face all night long is nothing special. And by the way, this is an elite defense. And so to not be willing to give your contemporaries the credit that they deserved because they earned it in victory, albeit at your expense, it shows the difference between professionalism and amateurism. It shows the difference between grown men and boys striving to become men. Mm. And that's what this comes down to. I'm not trying to be harsh on Cam Newton because I love the brother, but I am highlighting and illuminating what I undoubtedly know a nation of critics will do to him in the days, weeks, and months to come. This is one of those moments where he will always be remembered for how he conducted himself in defeat. They will not let it go away. It will stay with him for a very long time, if not the rest of his career. And by the way, for the record, his daddy did not help, because he came on the air being every bit as out there as his son was.
That's true.
In celebrating.
Yep.
And we couldn't find anybody when they lost. That is unfortunate.
All right. Now, you know, I find it interesting how he talks about we couldn't find anyone to speak up when Cam Newton lost that game, right? And a lot of the players at whom Cam had beaten throughout the year, a lot of those dudes didn't have anything to say until Cam Newton lost the football game. I know there was a player for the Seattle Seahawks who caused Cam a bitch and told him, you know, said he couldn't wait to play Cam Newton. Another player said that Cam Newton had quit on the game when he didn't dive for a fumble. And it's funny because these are guys who the Carolina Panthers had pretty much handled pretty damn well throughout the course of the year, right? So it's odd to, like, kind of listen to a lot of these guys say anything at this particular juncture. But one of the things that I found interesting was the fact that he said that Cam wasn't a professional because he didn't want to speak after a loss, right? And he left it to his teammates to have to speak after that loss, right? And they were hurting just as much as he was. But again, I kind of go back into that whole thing of how folks deal with grief differently. You know, Cam Newton is a grown man. Cam Newton knows exactly what he's doing. And it was amazing to me to watch Cam Newton over the course of the 2 weeks leading up to the Super Bowl, be authentically Cam Newton, be unapologetically Cam Newton, being himself, and then having folks celebrate him for being himself. And then in that moment, everyone flips and says that Cam Newton was unprofessional. Cam Newton was an amateur. Cam Newton is a boy trying to be a man. Cam Newton was being himself in that moment. And he said as much. Cam Newton said as much. After the Super Bowl was over, Cam Newton and the rest of his team were packing up their lockers, getting ready to go for the offseason. And he spoke about the criticisms that he received because of his actions during the Super Bowl, before, after, and during the Super Bowl. So here he goes.
Well, I ain't got no more tears to cry. I mean, obviously, I had a lot of time to think about it, and I've seen so much, you know, blown out of proportion. But, you know, at the end of the day, when you invest so much time, when you sacrifice so much, and things don't go as planned, I think emotions take over. I think that's what happens. And as far as trying to be like this person, trying to be like that person, I heard numerous, you know, quotes about, you know, what if this person was in that situation? How would he have handled it? Well, we've seen this person do that. How he would have handled it? The truth of the matter is, I'm not trying to be this person, nor am I trying to be that person. You know, I've said it since day one. I am who I am. I know where I'm capable of. I know what I'm capable of, and I know where I'm going. And I don't have to conform to anybody else's, you know, wants for me to do. You know, I'm not that guy. You know, if you want me to be this type of person, I'm not that. And I'm happy to say that. You know what I'm saying? This league is a great league with or without me. I understand that. And I am my own person. I take pride in that. And that's pretty much how I feel.
You don't have any regrets at all for how you handled it? Not to say that you should. I'm just asking if you do.
I really don't. I mean, it happened. It happened. I didn't want to talk to the media at the time. And truth of the matter is, I really still don't want to talk to the media. But at the end of the day, you know, things has to happen. I had a lot of time to go back and you know, play everything back. And like I say, I'm human. I've never once said that I was perfect. I never proclaimed that I was perfect. But at the end of the day, you know, people pick and do things of that sort. And that the truth of the matter is, you know, who are you to say that your way is right? Like, that's what I don't understand. Like, we got all these people that's condemning and saying, oh, man, he should have did this, that, and the third. But what makes your way right? I mean, I've been on record to say I'm a sore loser. Who likes to lose? You show me a good loser, and I'm gonna show you a loser. You know what I'm saying? I'm not here to. It's not a popularity contest. You know what I'm saying? I'm here to win football games. And for this organization, for Mr. Richardson, for my teammates, you know, and for what it's worth, my fans, you know, they know what's real. And I leave everything else out on the field. I prepare the right way. I have a mentality. I have a standard that I set for myself. And I'm not going to bend nor break. You know what I'm saying? I never once offended anybody along that. But at the end of the day, we had an unbelievable season. A great season at that, and we did what a lot of people didn't expect us to do. Hell, we did a lot of things that we were fast into doing. You know, people knew we were gonna win, but they didn't know how fast we would win. And at one point, we were undefeated. And the truth of the matter is, we got two losses. You know, some teams had two losses the first 2 weeks. So that's the truth of the matter. And for me, for me, it's just nothing's pretty much gonna change. I mean, you get what you get.
Hey, Cam, that last fumble there. Sure. Have you gone over that play in your mind, and if you could have done anything different?
What would you want me to do?
People are saying that you should have jumped in the pile, but you didn't. And so, what do you remember? What you were thinking at that moment?
Okay, I didn't get the fumble, but it's. I mean, we can play tit for tat. I see numerous quarterbacks throw interceptions and their effort afterwards. They don't go. I don't dive on one fumble because the way my leg was, it could have been contorted in a way. Okay, you say my effort. I didn't dive down. I fumbled. That's fine. But at the end of the day, that game wasn't built off of. We didn't lose that game because of that fumble. I can tell you that. So, you know, you can condemn and say, well, oh, man, he gave up. He did that in the third. But, hey, as long as my teammates know, as long as my coaches know, as long as anybody that's following his team knows, I mean, it's easy for a person to nitpick and say, oh, man, Cam did this. Oh, he gave up. He did that. That's cool. That's fine. I mean, I'm a grown man. I can understand that. But to say some things along the lines of that and to say it in my face, that's extremely different.
Cam, it sounds like your teammates are certainly supportive of you despite the criticism you got about the press conference. I mean, tell me about that. I mean, what would the players have to say to you about your efforts on the field and what your teammates have to say?
What's already understood?
Love him. All right.
Now, one of the things I found interesting about that was Cam didn't apologize for anything. Right. Cam was being authentically Cam, even in that moment. Right. No apologies whatsoever. And I appreciate that so much about Cam. Another thing, too, that I found interesting was when he asked what makes your way right. Right. What makes your way right? It's one of those things where, like, you start seeing folks. And I started seeing this, like, pretty much after, you know, after the Super Bowl. And I started seeing friends of mine, people that I know. Talk about, well, that you can't handle yourself in that way after losing the Super Bowl, man. You know, you got to go up there. You got to answer the questions, man. You know, it's part of your contract, man. It's part of being a professional and all these things. It's like, look, dude, who are you to say what you're supposed to do? And would you hold yourself up to that exact same standard? I don't know anybody who's ever lost the Super Bowl. Not one. I know nobody who's ever lost the Super Bowl. I know no one who is a franchise player of an NFL team who lost the Super Bowl. So all of these people who purport themselves to act as if they know what they would have done in that moment when Cam walked out of that news conference, that act like they know what they would have done in that moment, y'all full of shit. let's just put that out there. I've seen dudes lose games on the basketball court and not want to dap up after they lost the game, right? I've seen that happen. I've seen dudes get pissed over spades. You've seen niggas get ready to cut a motherfucker over a game of spades. But you gonna sit here and tell me Cam has to act a certain way when he walks out of a news conference after losing the biggest game of his life? You can play spades again next week, man. You may not ever play in a Super Bowl again. So act as if Cam Newton wasn't being true to himself and Cam Newton was a boy trying to be a man and act as if Cam Newton is less of a professional because he didn't want to do something that possibly could have led to something worse, right? Have you ever been so upset that you'll fuck around and do something that you would regret later, right? Have you ever been in that position? A lot of us have. Some of us deal with that by walking away from a situation to keep from doing something that we will regret later. Right? So I understand Cam. I understood what Cam was going through. I understood all of that. And another thing too, Cam already had his critics while he was winning. Whatever Cam did, whether he won or lost, those folks were still going to have something to say. So he can't worry about, and we can't worry about what your detractors are going to say about you all the time. Because no matter what he did, his detractors were going to have something negative to say about him. They didn't like the fact that he was dabbing. They didn't like the fact that he included his teammates in Photoshop and team photos on the sideline during blowouts. They didn't like the fact that he was dancing in the end zone. A mother wrote a letter to the Tennessean, I believe it was, or the Charlotte Observer, wrote a letter to them to state how appalled she was at the fact that Cam Newton was dancing. Folks don't like him already in his success. So the fact that he lost, yeah, those folks were going to really have something to say. And I'm glad that he didn't apologize to these people. I'm glad that he didn't make them feel as if they humbled him in a way that they thought they would have. Be who you are. Be unapologetic in who you are. And I appreciate that about Cam. I really do, man. And so Cam Newton wasn't the only one to have a really big weekend, right? Cam wasn't the only one. Beyonce dropped a video and a song called Formation the day before the Super Bowl, I believe. And then she was to perform at halftime of the Super Bowl, right? And so she created quite a stir, so to speak. She created quite a stir. And one of the things is like with Beyonce, it's as if, we know that Beyonce has a very strident, passionate group of fans. They call them the Bayhive and whatnot, right? Very passionate group of fans. And I used to joke like, man, you just don't say nothing about Beyonce, right? And it's one of those things where it's like when Beyonce comes out with a song, she has her fans who love every bit of it. And that's great. That's great. And you also have detractors. Right. And a lot of times it's usually dudes who sit around and talk about why these women going so crazy over Beyonce or whatever else. And it's really for me, I've grown to a point where it's just like, you know what? Hey, man, that's their thing. Let them have that. Let them have that. In much the same way that I would love to just like the Bulls win a championship. Let me have that. Let me have that. If the Bulls win a championship, let me have it. So, you know, she comes out with the song and she comes out with the video and it's a lot of striking images in the video, right? Lyrics. I mean, she basically came out and said who she was being unapologetically herself as well with this Formation video and with this Formation song when she talked about how she likes her daughter's hair, when she talked about how she likes her husband's nose and being unapologetic about it when she had the little boy dancing in front of a line of police officers. And then there was graffiti on the wall that says, stop shooting us. Now, the funny thing about that is like that. And the fact that during the Super Bowl that she had her dancers dressed in black and they had on black berets and that they formed an X in the middle of the field while they were doing the performance, man, they got conservatives up in they shit. Conservatives mad as hell. So much so that you got a group of people, I believe it's going to happen this Tuesday, taking their ass down to the NFL offices to go protest, right? We probably never see another black artist in at the halftime of the Super Bowl ever again behind this shit, right? But, that happened. And so, one of the things that I found really interesting was the fact that they instantly started talking about the Black Panther references and how they described the Black Panthers. And You guys gotta hear this. As a matter of fact, this person is actually going to be the Span Report podcast ass hat of the week. Wait, where is it? Uh-oh, I don't think you guys could hear that. Hold on a second. Try that again.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
All right. Now, this person is Peter Johnson Jr. He's one asshat of the week. He went on Fox News to say this.
Beyonce's Super Bowl performance was not a smash hit with everybody. One group is holding an anti-Beyonce rally next week outside NFL headquarters, calling the performance racially charged and outrageous over references to the Black Panthers and the Black Lives Matter movement. So what's going on here? Fox News legal analyst Peter Johnson Jr. is here to explain. So Peter, for the folks who did not watch the halftime show, what happened?
Well, at one point during the show, Beyonce and her dancers, they formed an X on the field. And some have interpreted that as a tribute to Malcolm X, the assassinated civil rights leader. Beyonce and her dancers were all dressed in black. At one point, they raised a fist like the Black Power salutes that we saw during the Civil Rights Movement and even at the Olympics, and then wore black berets. Now, why black berets? Some critics have likened those black berets to what the Black Panther Party wore in the 60s and 70s. And okay. see a photo of them. They, for the most part, were a criminal, violent group dedicated to Marxist change in America. Mm-hmm. And responsible for a lot of violence, including a lot of black-on-black violence in the African-American community throughout the United States. So that's...
All right. That right there in itself is a blatant fucking lie. Right? Blatant fucking lie. They weren't perpetuators of black-on-black violence. Right? They weren't a violent criminal group. That was not what the Black Panthers were. Of course, us being black folks, we have a very different perspective as to who the Black Panthers were and why the Black Panthers were formed to begin with. The Black Panthers were formed originally as a self-defense group against police brutality, right? They formed against police brutality. As a matter of fact, when we talk about, like, say, for instance, guns, because the Black Panthers were known for walking around with registered firearms in California, in 1967, Ronald Reagan, Republican governor of California, Ronald Reagan in 1967 signed the Mulford Act, which pretty much banned weapons, or what they would call the brandishing of weapons, in California, so where they could neutralize the Panthers in their ability to carry the weapons that they were using to keep the police from whooping our asses in the neighborhoods, right? So they tried to neutralize the Panthers by taking their weaponry away from them, by making it illegal for them to have them. Now, these very same weapons, a lot of white folks use these weapons too. A lot of white folks were what they would call collateral damage in this, because they wanted to neutralize this one group. They signed the Mulford Act and they took firearms out of the hands of millions of law-abiding citizens. Now, as a current member of the NRA myself, and I struggle with this lately. I'm looking at them and I'm like, where the fuck were y'all then? When that was happening, right? Where were y'all then when that was happening? But the Black Panthers were formed to keep police from brutalizing the citizens in which they were supposed to serve and protect. That's why the Black Panthers were formed. But let this guy tell it and let the listeners of Fox News tell it. They were a violent criminal group perpetuating black-on-black violence.
What stimulated this?
Okay, but the outrage is not just over the performance, but also she's got this new single out called Formation with a video.
Yeah, and it's a compelling video, and I've watched it several times. The video for the song Formation features a scene of an African-American boy wearing a hoodie before a line of police officers with the word "Stop shooting us" on a wall. This outraged members of the National Sheriff's Association. They turned off the TV when Beyonce appeared during the Super Bowl, saying they consider the song absolutely anti-police. A lot of other people like Peter King have tweeted, Beyonce Formation video, SB 50 Act was anti-police, shameful, repeats big lie of Michael Brown. Innocents, cops deserve support, not criminals.
All right, now, they keep referencing Mike Brown, right? One of the things that's very interesting is that Beyonce never mentioned the Black Lives Matter movement in the song, nor did she mention the Black Lives Matter movement in the video. But they keep talking about Mike Brown and the hands up, don't shoot. They really, really, really don't like Mike Brown. Like, they want it. And it's one of those things when it comes to when we talk about these police brutality incidents, where even if you believe, or even if you don't believe the official story, right? No matter what you think about Mike Brown, the fact remains is this. What remains is this, is that you're never going to, like, you can't have a perfect victim. So whether or not you believe that Mike Brown or Eric Garner or Trayvon Martin or Rekia Boyd, whether you believe these people were criminals or not, in the time in which they had their interaction with the police officer, was their rights being violated in that space? And so we started having these conversations as to whether or not, you know, Mike Brown is a criminal, or whether or not, you know, we should uphold the police. All of the only statement that was made in that particular video was, hey, stop shooting us. They didn't even mention anybody. Stop shooting us. And the fact that the police, the fact that you have right-wing conservative talking heads and politicians talking about this song being anti-police to say, hey, stop shooting us. Is that to mean that you have to be, for you to be pro-police, that you have to endorse the shooting of unarmed citizens? Is that what we're talking about here? Is that what we're doing? Because these things mean something, subconsciously or consciously. They mean something. So if you have this type of visceral reaction to seeing a black kid dancing and the police putting their hands up and the sign saying, don't shoot us, and your reaction is, hey, they're anti-police. No, it's, hey, do your fucking job. Do your job in the right fucking way. Do your job in where it doesn't infringe upon my rights as a human being and as a fucking American. Because we're all Americans, right? Right? So, yeah, man. He goes on, he's got more to say. Hold on. Wait. Yeah, he's got more to say.
So Twitter users were also angered, and they quickly pointed out that Beyonce actually had a police escort to the Super Bowl stadium for the performance.
I saw that. Okay, but what about Beyonce's supporters?
They're saying Beyonce's a great artist, and Beyonce says that she's proud of the message of both the video and the performance. And supporters say the music video speaks to her heritage as a black woman, and I've watched it, and it does. One supported tweeting, when she sang about single ladies, you were all hailing her as a queen. But now that she's singing about being black, it's boycott Beyonce. Here's the point. The point is that there are a lot of civil rights leaders that Beyonce could emulate and talk about. Black Panthers are not someone that need to be emulated.
All right.
All right. Now, that very last point is something that I think, and I'm going to end up having to repeat this. White folks, you don't get to dictate who black folks look up to and emulate and honor, especially on the basis of civil rights. You don't get to do that. You don't get to dictate to anybody who they look up to, emulate, and hold up. You can't say that, hey, she should have held up another group, not the Black Panther Party, especially when you have a fundamental misunderstanding or a fundamental miseducation or a willful miseducation and understanding of what the Black Panther Party stood for. You don't get to pick that for us. You don't. And it's, I don't understand why a lot of you don't understand why that is offensive and why that is wrong and why that is so fucked up. I don't get it. But this is something that I'm going to have to repeat, because this is something that gets said again. Because we have more than one ass out of the week this evening.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
Now, our second ass hat of the week this week is none other than Tomi Lahren. Tomi Lahren is from The Blaze, which is a right-wing-leaning website. I believe Glenn Beck started this after he left Fox News. And she had a final thought. She does a, I guess she does these things called her final thoughts. And she talked about Beyonce and the Black Panthers at the Super Bowl. And here's her thoughts.
Welcome back for some final thoughts tonight. First it was hands up, don't shoot. Then it was burning down buildings and looting drug stores, all the way to Oscar So White. And now even the Super Bowl halftime show has become a way to politicize and advance the notion that Black Lives Matter more.
Okay. At what point has the Black Lives Matter movement ever said that Black Lives Matter more than anybody else? When have they ever done that? When has that ever been the when has that ever been the thing? You know what I mean? I've always listened to Black Lives Matter, and I am a Black Lives Matter supporter. But I've always listened to that, and when the ending of that always seems to be Black Lives Matter also, or two. Not that Black Lives Matter more, or that any other people's lives don't matter. There's never been the inference when you say Black Lives Matter. But of course, you have a lot of willful people who willfully don't want to understand. I've spoken about this even with the homie Mr. Gates. There's a lot of people who do get it, and then there's a lot of people who just don't want to. Here's somebody who just does not want to, and it's so clear.
This isn't about equality. This is about ramrodding an aggressive agenda down our throats and using fame and entertainment value to do so. Beyonce, really? What is the political message here? What is it they are trying to convey here? A salute to what? A group that used violence and intimidation to advance not racial equality, but an overthrow of white domination?
What's so wrong about that? What's so wrong about that? Your people are being mistreated and you don't want to have it happen anymore. You want to eradicate what's happening to you. You want to be on equal footing. And you looking at this like, and you're trying to present this as if this is something that's wrong, right? Oh my God.
The Black Panthers, for those who don't know, were critical of Martin Luther King's nonviolent civil rights movement. They didn't believe in change through.
All right. Now, again, here's why I said I was going to end up having to repeat myself. White people, you don't get to dictate who Black people look up to, who they revere, and who they hold up. You don't get to do that. That is not your place. You can't do that for us. Right. And it's interesting that you would go to MLK. Very interesting that they would go to MLK. Like MLK, when Martin Luther King Jr. was killed, it wasn't because MLK was this martyr that everyone looks to now as the patron saint of civil rights. Like we have this image of MLK now. Right. A lot of people, especially on the right wing, when they talk about civil rights leaders, they always talk about what MLK would do. Or they even try to purport it. They're like, well, you know, MLK was Republican, right? Yeah, MLK was in the GOP. Not understanding that, like, a lot of things change politically concerning the Democratic Party and the Republican Party and how the demographics of those voting blocks changed over the course of time, especially during and after MLK's assassination, right? But the biggest thing here is, like, you know, we don't hear about the MLK that was against the Vietnam War and spoke up against it. We don't hear about the MLK who was spearheading the Poor People's Campaign and was assassinated while he was doing that very thing. We don't hear about the MLK who was on his way to Washington to ask for a reparations check. We don't get that MLK. A lot of people don't get that MLK. I mean, you can go on YouTube now and look at those videos. As a matter of fact, I wrote an article on thespanreport.com talking about this very thing, this the sanitation and the whitewashing of MLK's legacy on Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. During that holiday, I wrote about that. A lot of folks, they always talk about the peaceful Dr. King, the I have a dream Dr. King. If Dr. King was seen as this cuddly, nonviolent, non-threatening civil rights leader, Dr. King would probably still be alive and here with us today. Now, this very Dr. King that we hold up, and that a lot of these Republican people hold up, and a lot of these conservative-leaning people hold up as this bastion of hope and glory and nonviolent resistance and the perfect way to go about your civil rights, yeah, guess what happened to him? He met a violent end at the hand of white folks. He met a violent end at the hand of white folks. And it wasn't because he was dreaming. It wasn't because he was safe. No. He represented radical change, and a lot of people were uncomfortable with that in that time. So, white folks, you don't get to dictate to black folks who they hold up, who we revere, who we honor. You don't get to do that. That is not your fucking place. But, of course, she'll continue.
Peace, they promoted violence instead. So congratulations, Beyonce. You made your statement. You should be proud of yourself. The Super Bowl, the most watched event on television. A game that brings Americans of every color, background, and political party together. A game where black fans cheer next to white fans. A game where teammates work together as one, regardless of race. A celebration of diversity rooted in a common bond. But forget that. These privileged Hollywood entertainment tights are really something. Beyonce didn't reference the Black Panthers to bring about some kind of positive change. She did it to get attention. Good for you. You made headlines. You, just like President Obama, Jada Pinkett Smith, Al Sharpton, and so many others, just can't let America heal.
Well, maybe that's because there's a fucking problem. Have you ever considered that? Maybe the reason that you have to deal with these people and the things that they're saying is because there's a fucking problem. And instead of trying to tell people to shut the fuck up, how about you deal with the issues that are being brought forth? That's what America's supposed to be, right? We're the melting pot. Deal with the issues that are being brought forth.
Keep ripping off the historical Band-Aid. Why be a cultural leader when you can play the victim, right? Guess what, Beyonce? White people like your music, too. White people buy your songs on iTunes, memorize your lyrics, and admire your talent and beauty. Little white girls want to be like you just as little black girls do. But instead of recognizing that, you would rather perpetuate the great battle of the races.
So Beyonce sings a song about being proud of who she is, and it's now a detriment to white girls? White girls have no images of themselves in positive ways? White girls don't see themselves on TV all the fucking time? White girls don't have magazines geared towards their interests all the fucking time? Are you serious? Are you serious? Not only that. She said something that was very interesting. And she said that Beyonce was playing the victim. This young lady spoke about folks sending her death threats on Instagram and on Twitter. And one of the things that I found interesting, because this is something that actually happened, I believe, it was Owen Daniels, or Owen somebody. It was a comedian. He played on a couple shows on TBS, I believe. And Rod, over at the Black Guy Who Tips, kind of had a tiff with him earlier this week. And he spoke about how, that guy was pretty much disingenuous. He called Beyonce a cunt and didn't think anybody could see it and screenshot it. And he erased all his tweets. So it acted as if he didn't have these... He didn't make these comments, and he didn't have these interactions, right? And so Tomi Lahren says that after she put this out, that the Beehive started sending her death threats, right? They wanted her dead. And in this age of screenshots, in this age of technology, in this age of Google, in this age of Twitter, Facebook, whatever, can Tomi Lahren produce these death threats that folks were sending to her? I mean, because it's interesting. Like, I started seeing articles written, and most of them from conservative-leaning sites, of her saying that she had been threatened, that her life had been threatened, that people were coming after her and everything else. And she even did another final thought where she says, I'm not afraid of you. I'm going to speak my mind and everything else. But the thing that I thought was interesting, we get you ain't scared, but what them death threats at though? Who's sending them to you? I even looked it up. Like, I went on Twitter and I'm like, yo, okay, Tomi Lahren death threats, Tomi Lahren dead, and somebody had a tweet that said dead ass. They wanted to fight her. Dead ass, as in dead ass serious, but not that they wanted her dead. Maybe she got that misconstrued. Maybe she's not up on the lingo or the slang or whatever. Maybe she doesn't really know how people converse with one another on Twitter and whatnot. But she stated that folks were coming after her, that they were threatening her life. And she played the victim. So now I can't speak my mind. If I speak my mind about Beyonce, then all of a sudden these people are going to come after me, and now they're threatening my life. And now she's the victim. Beyonce, she just accused Beyonce of playing a victim, and now she's the victim for saying that she said something about Beyonce. And it's something that I started to notice among a lot of right-wing, you know, talking heads when they say something fucked up. And they always talk about how we have this First Amendment. Yeah, you have this First Amendment. And you can say whatever the fuck you feel. But guess what? Having the First Amendment doesn't mean that you are free from people responding to you. They also have the First Amendment too. So yeah, you may piss some people off. And those people who are pissed off are going to say something right back to your ass. So yeah, man. Tomi Lahren is also the Span Report asshat of the week this week. Got a lot going on this evening, man.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
I'm a little tired. Yeah, man. But yeah, that happened, man. And I had to speak to that. Because it's getting to a point, man, where just being who you are is a problem for some. And Beyonce is being who she is unapologetically. Cam Newton is being who he is unapologetically. And there's a lot of folks pissed about it. Pissed. You know what I mean? So, yeah, man. But, yeah, I'm going to cut it short this evening. But what I'm going to do is I do have some listener feedback that I do need to get to. So we're coming up here on the listener feedback portion of the show. And I got a couple emails here. And hold on a second. Let me pull these up. Listener feedback. Okay. All right. Now, this first email is entitled This Week in Hotep. I did release a new segment. I'm not going to do it tonight, but I did release a new segment called This Week in Hotep. But now this email is about that. And it goes like this. It says, Mr. Span, how are you? I'm writing you in response to a segment you called This Week in Hotep. And in this segment, you pretty much mocked a young man for seeking greater knowledge and understanding of the history of black people. He referenced the Willie Lynch letter, which seems to be the basis of most of your derision. So I have a couple questions. One, do you think that by mocking people in search of knowledge and understanding, you're being helpful in any way? Well, here's the thing. And I had a friend, me and a friend kind of got into this a little bit earlier in the week as well. Yeah, I mocked him only because there's this here. I kind of had this feeling. And I had this feeling that we live in a time where information and factual information is readily available. And if you only look for it, you could find it. And so when it comes to that information being readily available, whether that be on your smartphone, whether that be on your computer, whether that be on your tablet, that we really don't have any excuses for not knowing some of these things. Like if we really want, especially if we're going to make videos about it and speak about it, that we should pretty much kind of know what we're talking about. If we can go and we can research these things and we can find out the factual information on what's behind what it is that we're talking about. So when I make fun of people when they don't do that, it's really just to kind of like, hey man, you know, you didn't do your due diligence. And it's like, yo, I don't know if it's the correct way to do it, but it's my way of doing things. You know what I mean? So I think it's helpful in a way to where like you kind of have to think about something before you post it, right? Think about it. Do some serious thought before you post it. Now, of course, folks aren't always going to agree with you. And as long as I've been doing this show, I'm very much aware that folks are just simply not always going to agree with you. But yeah, man, This Week in Hotep, man, is really just a way of like looking at and kind of poking fun of like people who are like outrageously over the top with their search for the knowledge, right? The knowledge, so to speak, especially when we're talking about something that has been long refuted, right? So there's that. The second part he says is, even if you believe the Willie Lynch letter to be fake, doesn't the message still hold true to the conditions that we see in black people today? I'm sure you're a reasonable man, so I'd love to hear your response to this. Thanks for your show, and thanks in advance for your response. Sincerely, Lamar. Well, thank you for writing in, brother. Well, here's the thing, like with the Willie Lynch letter, and it's phony, man. And here's the thing, the Willie Lynch letter thing for me is like it's a sign of intellectual laziness, right? And one of the things that I did earlier in the week, because it's Black History Month, man, I started seeing a lot of these videos pop up with guys who were talking about the Levi's jeans and the Levi's jeans being tied to a tactic that Willie Lynch talked about in the Willie Lynch letter and everything else. And one of the things about the Willie Lynch letter is the fact that, one of the things that I said was, being that it was Black History Month, hey, here's what I need you guys to do. Go ahead and find any sort of documentation of Willie Lynch outside of the Willie Lynch letter, whether that be a picture, whether that be a letter that he wrote, whether that be someone else speaking about Willie Lynch, come up with some sort of documentation of this man existing outside of this letter, right? Because you have to, I'm looking at it like this. For someone like a Willie Lynch to have existed, you would think that there would be more than one particular record of his existence, and that being the convenient Willie Lynch letter, right? Another thing too is, like, how convenient would it be to lay the condition of Black people, an entire group of people, lay their entire condition at the feet of one person? How convenient is that for this one person to be able to answer all of the questions of why Black people are the way that they are, right? And we attribute that to this one person. And so I'm thinking of it like this. Well, if Willie Lynch was so influential in this way, then surely somebody of the time in the 1700s who may have been to that Willie Lynch seminar, who may have employed some of his methods, that they may have written about Willie Lynch, or that Willie Lynch had, you know, he had like this. I imagine Willie Lynch to have this exhaustive consulting firm for slavery, right? Hey, you can't get your slaves to act right? Hey, man, you need to go holler at my boy Willie Lynch. He gonna hold you down, man. I'm telling you, I've been using his tactics, man. I'm telling you, man, they work. Let me go ahead and put you on. I'm gonna write him a letter and see if he can, you know, he can fit you into the next seminar. Nobody ever spoke about this Willie Lynch guy outside of this Willie Lynch letter, and he influenced this much of how Black people are to behave 300, 400 years later. So my thing is, what is this Willie Lynch letter keeping you from learning? What is this Willie Lynch letter stopping you from looking into? And that's my thing. Because if we can attribute all of the actions of Black people to this one dude, then why the fuck else do we have to look at anything? I got everything I need right into this whole letter right here. Everything I need is right here in this neatly wrapped bow with the name Willie Lynch on it. So my thing is, if we're going to look into our history, if we're going to be having honest discussion about it, we can't be having honest discussions about it when we attribute everything that happens to Black people to the foot of one dude that we know didn't exist. Right? And it's funny, man. Like, it's funny in a sense, man, because, you know, I see all the time, man, like around Christmas time on Facebook, how like Black folks would be like, yo, man, I'm not giving no white man credit for like buying my kids these gifts. You know what I mean? Like, they real adamant about Christmas time and them kids being happy and like, yo, I ain't giving the white man no credit for that. But then you start saying some fictional ass white person from 400 years ago is the reason why your sister doesn't like light-skinned dudes. We'll attribute it to that. We'll do that. And so, I mean, I think it's intellectually lazy, man. That's really what it is. I think that when we start acting as if Willie Lynch is the end-all be-all of who we are as a people, that is lazy. And so this idea or this thinking that, well, the idea of Willie Lynch is still holds some truth to it. Nah. No. That's lazy. Learn your history. Learn it. Study it. Be proficient in it. So that when you do have a conversation with somebody in the know, you're not pulling out some bullshit about Willie Lynch and you don't know what the hell you're talking about. Learn your history. Stop leaning on this Willie Lynch shit. is not productive. It's just not. And you look foolish saying, I mean, you look foolish with it. So, you know, that's my thing with the Willie Lynch thing. Like, yo, it's always a sign of this person doesn't really know what the hell they're talking about. And that's just how it is. That's how it is. At least that's how I look at it, right? So that's my thing. But I appreciate you, Lamar, for writing in, brother. And I hope to hear from you again soon, man. Real talk. I got another email here. And this one here is from Angela. And Angela writes in to say, hello again, Mr. Spann. It's been a long time since I've written to your show, but I've been faithfully listening nonetheless. Thank you, sister. Okay, here we go. And I had a question that I just needed to ask. It's been hard not to notice how often you speak up on behalf of women in regards to issues like rape, sexual assault, sexual harassment, and street harassment. And make no mistake, sir, your advocacy and your voice is refreshing to hear, especially from a man, but it's also very important. With all that said, I really wondered, do you now consider yourself a male feminist because of your advocacy for women and girls? And if so, what happened to bring about that change? Interesting question. I don't think that I would qualify or I would consider myself a feminist. I feel as though I would like to believe, or at least I would like to think of myself as a humanist, right? My philosophy has kind of grown into like equal, like equality for everybody, like everybody just being, you know, on a level playing field, whether you be a woman, whether you be a man, whether you be Asian or you're Black or Latino, Hispanic or white, whether or not you're LGBTQ, all of these things, man, like that people just honestly treat you as a human being. And so when I speak about the things that are happening with women and with girls, I think it's important because that's something that I don't hear. I mean, I don't hear a whole hell of a lot of brothers talking and having those conversations like that. And I think it's important. I know of a few brothers though. I know of Rod over the Black Guy Who Tips, Chris over at Movie Trailer Reviews, Brandon over at Where's My 40 Acres. A lot of people, man. I know a few people who speak on these issues as well. So it's not just me. But I think it's an important thing, especially now in my, like, I've come to a point in my life, man, where I just kind of looked at some of the things that I was saying and how it affected others. And, I felt like I was somehow part of the problem. Like, I had a conversation with a friend of mine, and we were talking about, you know, a bit of like some of the ways in which my philosophies have changed about, you know, feminism or, you know, LGBTQ, equality rights and things like that. And my boy called me, he straight up called me a male feminist. Right. And one of the things he said was, you know, we as Black people will never come, we will never get it together if we started getting diverted into worrying about all these other side issues. So if we start worrying about women's issues, we're being diverted. If we start worrying about LGBTQ issues, we're being diverted. And one of the things that I had to tell him was this, is you got Black folks who are LGBTQ. You got Black folks who are women. So they have issues that are specific to them that they want to see some changes happen to. So for you to tell them as a Black man that they need to wait until you get yours before they get theirs is bullshit. Nobody's going to take you seriously. Nobody's going to want to stand behind you and fight as hard for you when you're putting their issues to the back burner so that you can get yours. And there's a lot of brothers who do that. Like, yo, man, you know, these gay people, man, they getting their rights, but what about me? Like, hey, man, look, there's some Black people who are gay too that are benefiting from that. Hey, these women getting all these advances, man. What about me? Hey, there's some sisters who are benefiting from that. It ain't about just you. So when we start attacking issues all across the board, when we start looking at a woman's right issue and women get the equality in a certain issue, hey, that's a benefit to your daughter. That's a benefit to your mother. That's a benefit to your sister. You can't look at that as a negative for you. That benefits you as well when your woman, your wife, your sister, your daughter, your mother is happy. because something is going well for them in their life. That benefits you as well. So, you know, I don't necessarily consider myself a feminist. I consider myself a humanist who will speak to issues that I think is, you know, when I see something that I believe is wrong, I will speak to it. And so, yeah, that's pretty much my philosophy on that. She also writes in to say, because I've been listening to you for quite some time and your voice on this issue wasn't nearly as strong as it is now. Thank you for all that you do to bring attention to these issues, and congratulations on reaching 100 episodes. With much love and respect, Angela. Thank you again, Angela, for writing in. But yeah, I mean, yeah, I understand. Like, you know, if you guys have been listening to this show for a long time from the beginning, like, yeah, man, I've said some real problematic shit. I've said some really fucked up shit. And excuse me, I own that. And I keep all those episodes available. I keep all of those videos available because that was a snapshot of where I was in that time in my life. And so I'm not running away from that. And that's who I was at that time. This is who I am at this time. And this is what I feel is important. And so with this platform that I have now, I want to speak to it because I believe it's important. And you know, there's really no need to thank me. This is just something that I kind of feel is common sense, or should be common sense for a lot of folks, right? But thank you again, Angela, for listening. Thank you for writing. And I hope to hear from you again soon, Sister Real Talk. But yeah, man, listen, it is it's getting late. It's like 1:30 in the morning, Valentine's Day. So happy Valentine's Day to all you guys, man. I hope a lot of you fellas go ahead and y'all work that out and get y'all Red Lobster. Y'all done earned it, right? Shout out to Black Girl Magic, man. You can't tell me Black Girl Magic ain't a real thing, man. Before Beyonce talked about going to Red Lobster, a lot of motherfuckers are turning their noses up at Red Lobster. She said that shit, they sales went up 33% after that, man. So, so yeah, man, I hope you guys have a really eventful and wonderful Valentine's Day. For all of you single folks, man, don't be bitter, don't be salty, man. It's love for everybody, man. Go ahead and ask for a hug. Hugs is free, man. I'm telling you, real talk. But I gotta get out of here. But before I get out of here, I gotta let you guys know how to get in touch with me here at the Spam Report. Let your voice be heard. Of course, hit me up at the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave me those voicemail messages, and of course I will reply to those here on the show. And you can also email the show here at feedback@thespareport.com. That's feedback@thespareport.com. Leave me those emails. And, of course, I'll read your emails just like I did with Lamar and Angela. And we'll chop it up here on the show live as well. You can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span. You can go to Facebook and like the Mr. Span fan page, man. It would be very much appreciated, man. For all of your Span Report needs, go to www.thespanreport.com. All of the podcasts are available there. All of the sound clips that I've used for the show are available there. And you can go check those out for yourself. But yeah, man, it's getting late. I'm getting tired. It's been a long and eventful day. But until next time, fam, peace.